Welcome to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. Tim Priester back from Brooklyn, joined by Tim O'Malley and myself. Notre Dame out of the NCAA tournament. I think that we talked about whether Notre Dame would make it or not almost as long as we're going to talk about who's starting a quarterback against Michigan. Ultimately, Notre Dame was in until about 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon when Davidson beat Rhode Island in the Atlantic 10 Conference Tournament final. So Notre Dame is going to the NIT as a number one seed, if that means anything. But they play at home tomorrow night against Hampton. Priester, you were in Brooklyn, so you got to sort of see the Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech, Duke three-game swing there where they got hammered Pittsburgh, sort of, and then held on and then had a ridiculous rally against Virginia Tech and then sort of ran out against Duke.
I mean, they won two out of three games and probably played poor basketball longer than they played quality basketball. I mean, they made the incredible run, against Virginia Tech, but it's a flawed team, and we knew in December it had flaws when they lost to they got hammered by Michigan State on the road and lost to Ball State at home and lost to Indiana and Indianapolis. But now everybody is pointing at that time period and saying, well, they weren't very good with Bonzi Colson, and I get that. But of course, if you have Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell throughout the season, Mike Bray probably figures it out, and they're a 12-6, 11-7 team in the conference. But that's not how it happened. And you can't, my big thing is you can't put Notre Dame in because I think Notre Dame belongs in the tournament. You have to take in consideration all the incredible number of automatic berths that come out of this. And yesterday, it's funny, it was 2 weeks ago on Thursday Thoughts, and I randomly went through the mid-major conferences and said, you can't just look at what Notre Dame does. You have to look at, somebody's going to win a conference tournament and you don't expect it. For example, the Atlantic 10 with Rhode Island and St. Bonaventure, who were clearly going to make it between them. They only had like 11 losses, but Davidson was like 17-11. Well, Davidson's good enough to win that conference tournament, and damn if they didn't do it yesterday.
If you're a Notre Dame fan, the most disappointing thing would be they were knocked out by Davidson, I think, because there's two schools of thought on this for Notre Dame. If you went in, they clearly do not have the resume to be in the NCAA tournament. They clearly are one of the best 34 at-large teams with Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell. So the fact that it seems like the committee was almost weighing them together and saying, yeah, maybe the resume is almost good enough. If they're the last team knocked out, they must have thought it was.
And I kind of figured they were going to, I assume they were going to get the play-in game that Syracuse got, right?
That's fine.
And that's
all they wanted. That's nothing wrong with that.
Right. And that's, that's good. That would have been good enough. And I think everybody would have been satisfied with that. They would have had to play Arizona State and would have had a really tough time getting to the field of 64.
But Syracuse, four wins against NCAA tournament teams, Notre Dame five, including at Syracuse without Colson and Farrell. So if you're a Notre Dame fan, that probably angers you a little bit. Notre Dame missed the NCAA tournament for one reason, and you and I stood on the court on January 13th and said this is going to be the death knell for the NCAA tournament, when with a minute left, they didn't get the charge block call against North Carolina. Could have gone either way. They made a hasty foul with 1 second left on the shot clock to give game-winning free throws to Joel Berry, and TJ Gibbs missed a point-blank tip-in for the win. They are 9-9 with a win over North Carolina, de facto eighth place in the ACC and in the NCAA tournament. Without a doubt, they're in.
Yeah, you can say the Louisville game, too. They don't win the North Carolina game. Well, they could have won the Louisville game.
Three chances to win with the ball.
Right, exactly.
And Ball State, I know we're going to bring up Ball State. They were never going to beat Ball State. The only chance they'd beat Ball State was when they tied it at the end of the game, and Ball State
Ball State was a better team start to finish that night.
That's really not an argument for Notre Dame to make it at all, then. But I agree with when you're the 69th team, there's a lot of ways to look at it. Like, well, have you done this or that? I think if they'd beaten Indiana and Ball State, which they should have.
You're saying they're better than them.
They're better than them.
They should have beaten IU.
Then that would have made the with Bonzi Colson argument really, really good, because they would have been 12-1. I think their only loss would have been at Michigan State.
Yeah, you they'd know, be 16-3, including all ACC.
Yeah, so it's like when you have the Bonzi Colson argument strengthened, because clearly it was an argument that the committee bought, then they would have got in. So it's difficult for Notre Dame not to make it at the expense of Syracuse. It probably would have been difficult for Louisville if Notre Dame made it at the expense of Louisville, since Louisville won at Notre Dame.
Right.
It's like there are 68 teams, and what, the last 15 of them that made it, or if you took the last 10 that made it and the first 10 that didn't,
you can change them over and it wouldn't.
Louisville
matter.
Got knocked out by a bank three at the buzzer by Virginia,
right? Because
they are in without a doubt if that shot doesn't go in.
Well, Dick Vitale thinks there are 75 teams in the tournament every year, apparently, because he gets mad every year about the mid majors that aren't in. But anyway, let me just Syracuse. And I understand people are upset because Notre Dame beat them without Colson and Farrell at Syracuse. But Syracuse beat Miami, the third seed in the ACC tournament. They beat Clemson, the fourth seed in the ACC tournament. They beat Virginia Tech during the regular season, the seventh seed, and Louisville, the eighth seed.
Those are the four wins, though, against anybody in the NCAA tournament. Those are the four wins. That's it.
Okay, and Notre Dame's five are, well, but they didn't.
Syracuse.
They were
same NC State. They have NC State. They have Florida State, NCAA tournament, Syracuse.
They're 3-10
Virginia
against
Virginia Tech, yeah. But I mean, there's one more win. They play more of them. That's good to play more. They beat Wichita State in a neutral site.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why Notre Dame fans are upset. I get that. Now, Syracuse has been on the bubble a lot in recent years and have fallen on the other side many times. Now, does that come into play? Who knows? I mean, human nature.
One thing that does come into play is money, and that's why Oklahoma is in the NCAA tournament.
Read off the we all heard the stats.
Listen, Notre Dame might have gotten in because of money, had they gotten in, because people wanted to watch Bonzi Colson play in the NCAA tournament too. Mike Bray didn't say Bonzi Colson's one of the most popular players in America, just to say it. He was using Bonzi Colson's draw as a draw for them. And Oklahoma's in, despite winning two games since February 1st, because they have Trae Young.
Yeah, I think more people tune in to watch Trae Young than they do Bonzi Colson, just because of the nature of his game. You know, it's more dynamic and fast and wide open. But it's unfortunate. I was at Notre Dame last night, late night duty on Sunday night for an NIT. I'll remember that for the rest of my life. But you know, I mean, they brought out the three main seniors and. I mean, they were pretty damn adamant that we're going to play, man. We're going to play. We have an opportunity to play. We're pissed off. I mean, Farrell said it. It sucks being here. They all said that, but we're in it now, and we're going to play it. We're going to try to win it.
And since this is not live radio, we can talk about the NIT, and no one can change the channel. They're just going to have to press for it a little if they want to. But my theory is if they can win the first two, because that's where the interest level. I mean, they should beat Hampton because you can't really be mad and then go out 2 days later and lose to Hampton. That would be strange. Next week will be another. It kind of depends on the crowd and everything, I think, for game two against Temple or Penn State. Look, they're better than those teams, but they have flaws. And if they don't play their best, they can lose either one of them, even at home. Because it's not. The home crowd for game two is not going to be that impressive.
There'd be no students there. Even if there were, there'd be no students there.
I feel like if they get out of those two, the crowd would come back for maybe that game three with maybe Marquette or Baylor type team.
Now, just to clarify, I mean, Notre Dame plays tomorrow night, Tuesday night, 9:00 at Notre Dame. It's our understanding, at least when I left last night, that we won't know when they play the second game until the women's bracket is announced tonight, because the women are playing at home. Games. So the second game can be, for the 12 people that are going to tune in with me, the second game will be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, one of those 4 days. So
is Notre Dame going to win the NIT?
That's really the only question, right? I think they will get to New York and not win the NIT. What's yours?
I think that's a good call.
History,
I mean, they have to get through Hampton. I mean, just to throw some names on, let's say Hampton, Penn State, Oregon, and then to win it in New York, Baylor and Oklahoma State.
Or Louisville, again.
Louisville's on the same side, I think, as Baylor, so.
Louisville and Oklahoma State, that'd be fun.
Yeah, whatever. There are some really talented teams in there. It'd be difficult to win it.
No Notre Dame team has ever won the NIT. It's when you get to New York, they generally do care at that point about trying to win it. Of course, a long time ago, it meant a lot to win the NIT. But 35 years.
It did.
The recent losses, I think the Herengody team that lost to Penn State, they were a flawed team that just lost to a better team probably in the Final Four. I know LaFonso Ellis lost to a ranked Virginia team in the championship game with Brian Stith, that you won't see that anymore in the NIT. Yeah. And there's some when you were growing up in the 70s with Toby Knight and Virginia Tech.
Yeah,
right?
Virginia Tech. Yeah, absolutely lost in the finals.
Pete remembers the Chris Thomas NIT.
Oh, yeah. I was kibitzing with Tom Noe on Twitter about that last night.
Bray brought up, you know, I've had two teams, one that wanted to play and one that didn't. He believes that this team will be one that does.
I was at the NIT game for the Herring-Odie run where they played UAB with Mike Davis, the former IU coach.
Right.
So there was no one at that game either. Yeah. And somebody, a friend of mine, was watching on TV, and that's when we used to sit in the middle of press row. He's like, I can see you on press row. Stand up and yell my name. I want to hear if you can hear it on TV. I thought that would be one of the best ways to get kicked out. It'd be kind of funny.
If you're interested in NIT history, the number one seeds in last year's tournament went 3-4. None of them made it to the quarters. Obviously, none of them made it to New York.
The quarters is the last home game, right?
Yeah, the third round in the year before that. One number one seed made it to New York, Valparaiso. Yeah, number one seeds, a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, these are, as Priester sort of intimated, if you want to play, it's obvious. If you don't, it's obvious. It's like a minor bowl game.
You know, but you can still want, I have no doubt in my mind after being there last night that they want to play. They're determined that they're going to play. You still, there's no way you can have the emotion that you'd have in the NCAA tournament.
And
there's
game two, no way. I think game two is the test. Game one, I think they'll come out and play and just beat Hampton. Game two against a decent team when there's still no one there, that's a harder one. A week later, that's the mental test is game two.
Yeah, I think fortunately you have Colson and Farrell in particular, who I think are, you know, I mean, they're gym rat, junkyard dog type players.
They definitely have the right makeup as opposed to some other teams.
Right, and really Gebbin, you know, I think Gebbin has developed into that kind of player himself.
Yeah, the crowd aspect of it, O'Malley, I think you're right. Like, the first game, you can sort of get by on angst against Hampton, and then you actually have to want to play basketball and prepare to play basketball from there on out, and that's a little bit trickier.
Bray said last night, you know, he's like, I said to the team, you know, it's spring break, I don't have anything better to do, and I said...
They do?
They do. Yeah. He said, yeah, Florida.
I think the way to look at it is, if Temple was coming into Notre Dame for a non-conference game, you wouldn't just guarantee a Notre Dame victory, right? You wouldn't. Why would you think that they're definitely going to beat Temple or Penn State? So that's what you're facing with half the crowd and half the interest.
It's a mental
game.
You know, you got to look at the flip side. How motivated? I don't know. Temple and Penn State, are they going to be motivated?
That's right. The whole thing is weird. It's weird and awkward.
It is what it is.
Do they still have the CTI? Can we break that one down? Are those gone?
We've now spent almost 14 minutes.
It still exists again.
We've now spent 14 minutes talking about basketball, and we haven't mentioned football yet. So before people shut this off, haven't already.
Fort Wayne is in the CTI. Yeah. CIT. I'm sorry. It's the CIT.
Oh, they changed it, huh?
Yep.
So anyway, Priester missed our 30 minutes of viewing and the announcement of captains, and O'Malley and I had a bet about what your reaction was when you heard about the captains being named.
What, there are no walk-ons?
Yeah.
What do you mean, about Newsom being elected as
your least favorite position in the world?
The first specialist captain that we can remember.
Well, I do. I'll say this: that, you know, he's a very, very unique personality, and there's no doubt about Tyler Newsom being committed to the job.
You just don't like punters. It's not Tyler Newsom.
Yeah,
no, you don't like punters.
I mean, I don't, and I have nothing against Austin Webster either. Other than I just don't think that a walk on should, you know, unless a walk on that. You know, I understand Joe Schmidt walks on, becomes a starter, but whatever. I didn't quite look at it from New York. I didn't quite look at it from the same way, but I followed everything you guys said and read every bit of Brian Kelly's transcript, and it's spring football again, and there are no games to be played for 6 months.
That's a good way to look at it. That's a fair way to.
No, I'm glad I only missed one. I'll be back for everything else.
All right. Well, that's it for segment one, Irish Illustrated Insider. Questions for our readers next.
Segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider, burning up the boards. We will start with one more comment about Notre Dame basketball, starting from Perm. If DJ Harvey is unable to return from injury next season, do you think Notre Dame pursues a grad transfer, since that would leave us with six scholarships with the experience plus the five freshmen? Or do you see Bray playing several freshmen since many were highly heralded?
I mean, it's a good question. I don't think there's going to... I don't know enough about the grad transfer market to say, but there certainly are a lot of them. And, you know, in college basketball, it's a lot easier than college football because you're just sort of drafting up from guys in mid-majors who can play. And I think there's going to be some that could help Notre Dame immediately next year. So I think it would be smart to do that. But I feel like next year is sort of a... Bray has enough money in the bank here that he can have a complete rebuild type season, which is going to be. And I think it could be really interesting and kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I kind of wrote about this in my column after leaving Brooklyn. But I don't think the fans react that way.
They would have had they made the tournament this year.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But they didn't. Yeah. And so a year from now, nobody's going to be saying, oh, they were so injured last year. It will simply be 2 years in a row that they didn't make the NCAA tournament. And then you start to have, you know, the comments made about Bray that we heard prior to this previous three-year stretch.
Next year would be a great year to just make it to the NCAA tournament.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
I mean, there's enough players. If you get, you got to have, I mean, there's some knee injuries hitting every level with Harvey. You need one of those guys healthy. Durham has to be a healthy impact player. It's a killer that Martin Gebben, I know that it's, you know, redshirt a lot of basketball players, but boy, it's a killer that Martin Gebben went out there and
bounced around the bottom of the rim if he had been redshirted, then he probably wouldn't have developed this year. It would have been next year. You know, I mean, he just didn't.
It wouldn't hurt.
No,
He was one of the few guys that couldn't play at all as a freshman, and he went out there and kind of. He couldn't play at all.
He couldn't play at all. And they were counting on him to play quite a bit then.
That is probably why he played. They thought he'd be better as a freshman.
Well, Mooney has to be more of a paint presence. I like the way he rebounds, generally speaking. But
Gibbs is a really good player, and he's only going to get...
He's got to be more consistent.
He could get more consistent. So be more consistent in that manner. And then you need these freshmen to hit.
The freshmen are going to play.
The end of this question is great. I see, no matter, even if they get a grad transfer, he should be playing several freshmen because they can get much better from December to the end of the season if he does that, because that's where the talent lies, is the youth. The Harvey injury, that is a... I mean, they needed him to be kind of like TJ Gibbs this year, next year.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a career-altering injury. You know, ending is too dramatic, but Tom Noe from the South Bend Tribune reported a microfracture. That's serious stuff.
That's bad. That's not your, you know, that, like compared to an ACL, an ACL is easy to come back from right at this stage of medical technology compared to microfracture. So, no, that's not good. Freshmen are going to play a lot. Robbie Carmody is going to play. Nate Leschewski is going to play because he's a big shooter that can shoot over zones. Dane Goodwin's going to play because he can shoot.
I think the major issue I have with this year is that really – John Mooney is the only young guy that really showed you have a lot of promise going to next year. You would have thought Jogo with all this playing time. I thought more of Jogo when he started out and was playing poorly. Like the North Carolina game when he took that heat check. And then against Louisville, he sprinted down to chase down a play from behind on defense. I thought, you know what? This is going to help him. He's going to be a player. I think way less of him than I did in January. I think way more of Mooney. Then I was high on Mooney, but we hadn't seen it. Now I'm high on Mooney.
Elijah Burns has played way less than Jogo, but he's had more moments.
Yeah.
And it's only been a handful. He's had more moments where you thought, okay, wow, he's really playing. He can play defense. He can bang. He's a good team defensive player. He sets great screens. But Jogo is just a guy running around on the court, man. I mean, that is a guy getting 22 minutes of playing time and doing virtually nothing other than offering some length defensively.
It is as if he is indifferent to the people scoring around him on the other team. That's his defense. Oh, layup.
It's like, I'm just happy to be playing.
Did you see Chris Clark's reaction when he saw Jogo go guard him in that Virginia Tech? He was like, give me the ball right now. I am going to score every time.
They got Notre Dame, with the exception of TJ Gibbs, is an entire roster of guys who need to get a lot better. That's it.
Yes, agreed.
It's a big ask.
Agreed. Let's talk some football. Ask a question.
Please.
We already turned out. Everybody's already tuned out. Don't worry. Golden by name. What's more likely this season? Dexter Williams leads the team in rushing touchdowns or Julian Aquara leads the team in sacks?
It's Aquara. Aquara is the answer here.
Yeah, wow. because TJ Jones TJ Jones.
He's good. We need TJ Jones. Tony Jones
will get the goal line carries.
Also, you have a quarterback who runs it in.
Right.
That's
I was about to say
Dexter Williams, and I was like, well, if Brandon Whipps is starting, he'll lead the team in rushing touchdowns.
That's
and
a
then
good
Tony
call.
Jones will be two and Dexter Williams will be three.
I was the other way until you brought me back to reality that Brandon Wimbush or Ian Book could lead the team in rushing touchdowns. Yeah, I could see Dexter Williams getting more than Tony Jones if Dexter Williams just plays to somewhat the level everyone hopes he can, because he breaks some runs off and you can.
Sure.
Yeah, there's goal line things would go to Brandon Wimbush because it's really hard to stop a college quarterback from running it in. Yeah. He knows how to do it. The Aquara sack thing is interesting. Julian Aquara, I'm interested to see Tim in a week when we see Julian Aquara
again. Yeah, I haven't seen him yet.
It's a noticeable loss of weight. And I cannot. The coordinators come out and his position coach will be coming out. Those are the guys I want to ask.
Absolutely.
Why, it was on purpose, but why? Why did he? Because it seems like it makes him more of a specialist than he already was.
Yeah, I mean, he was a good specialist.
Yes, he was.
But he didn't have a great second half of the season either. I look at that. Leading Notre Dame in sacks next year is not going to be a huge number. So Julian Aquara would do it with six. I mean, six. Whoever
right.
leads
a lot
Notre
of
Dame
guys
in
will
sacks,
get six and five and four. And
yeah,
seven.
Half
yeah.
dozen is probably going
to
be
it's
the
just,
team
it's
lead.
It's so unusual because, I mean, we're not talking about a kid that you thought, okay, wow, he needs to drop a couple pounds. You never thought that.
No.
And it's so rare. I'm sure he's stronger. He went through Bayless. He's added muscle mass.
I thought he would have gained weight.
Well, muscle mass is heavier, and so that's what I'm saying. It's so strange. He should have. I don't get that. I don't understand. I'm interested to see him in person.
Irish Boo, how likely is it that Jameer Jones redshirts?
I don't know how likely it is because he's a junior, and that's a tough sell. If he was a sophomore moving positions, I would say it's likely that he redshirts. He's a pretty good special teams player. The move to the line, or the move of positions again for year three, it would be a good idea.
Well, the move to the line was what we thought when he was recruited.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, for several years we felt...
Junior redshirt, though, how likely? Do you know what I'm saying? It'd be getting him a year, but it would help his career, probably.
We don't... Do you know Jameer Jones? Do any of us know Jameer Jones? I mean, he's Jerron Jones' brother. So if he's anything like Jerron...
He doesn't want to redshirt as a junior.
Yeah, and I don't think he's like...
I don't think that he is.
I think a lot of it depends on what's his comfort zone in Notre Dame. Does he see himself spending an extra year at Notre Dame? I don't know. It's a good question because I don't think really any of us are in much of a position because we haven't had any interaction with Jameer Jones.
I think it's a good question and a good idea. If I was to guess, I don't think you're going to have a junior redshirt. Is that the best way of saying it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost...
It's very unusual.
It's a pretty good idea, though.
I'm trying to think of the
Can
last
we think
time
of one
happened.
That wasn't a result of an injury.
No, it's like, I mean, the weird exceptions are like, they tried to redshirt Schwenke as a sophomore, and then Jay Hayes as a sophomore, then Brent and Holmes as sophomores.
Brent sophomores, yeah.
But as a junior, I can't think of one.
You know, the other thing is, it would depend, and from if you're a coach, the selfish point of view, you might be redshirting a guy that wants to go play somewhere for 2 more years, like Corey Holmes. Corey Holmes That's graduated possible. Early and kind of had the option to go play 2 years somewhere else, like Freddie Canteen at Notre Dame. You almost have to have an agreement if we redshirt you to develop you. Don't... Stay here rather than go somewhere else.
That's possible, too. But, I mean, Jameer Jones, you're looking at probably Notre Dame's sixth best defensive end behind Aquara, Hayes, and Kareem, and then Okindeje.
It certainly has an edge on him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not – and Jameer Jones factored into specialty packages last year, and Okadija really didn't.
Right.
But just in terms of physical measurables, you look at Okadija and think, oh, there's really something interesting to work with there. Jameer Jones just sort of looks like a shorter tweener type, which he is. He's a tweener between a linebacker and a defensive end.
And he's a strong side defensive end, correct? Do you know where he aligned the other?
He must have, yes, he was a strong side defensive
end. Okay, so if Jay Hayes bumps inside, maybe that gives him a little bit more practice time at strong side defensive end.
He must have really grown into the need for that, because there's a need at linebacker. He spent the whole year learning linebacker last year, and there's an absolute need for a linebacker.
Yeah, but you had some good ones coming in. And some good ones in the freshman class that are already here.
Yeah, linebacker was... I watched the linebackers and you're like, well, if Tranquil and Coney left, which at one point we thought both were leaving,
can you imagine?
It would be a huge rebuilding job for Clark Lee on that side of the ball. Instead, that the defense, at least at the front end of it, looks pretty good. I mean, Tillery he is a really light on his feet, 300-pound dude right now. And you know, if they can get the Okwara Dalen Hayes combination working, I think a defense could be pretty good. But, you know, as far as Jameer Jones, I just think he's too valuable as a special teams player and like a situational player, whether it's goal line defense where he played last year against LSU. Actually, like, I remember O'Malley and I watched him like for some weird reason, like
with binoculars.
Like Jameer Jones is in. And like he held up and made a really good play. So, I mean, he's contributed something to Notre Dame as a defensive lineman already.
Andy Football Fan 2012, this is an offensive line question. The first line we saw showed Robert Hainsey at left tackle, followed by Josh Lugg, Sam Mustafer, Alex Bars, and Tommy Kramer at right tackle. Give me a different offensive line you could see starting the 2018 season.
I don't think they will start a different offense. Ultimately, that will be the line that they start. But I could see Kramer at left guard and Eichenberg at right tackle, and everybody else the same.
I agree with you, Pete. I mean, we heard a lot of positive things from behind closed doors being said about Josh Lugg, and so I would think that they want to get him in the lineup. Eichenberg had an opportunity last year to make a mark, and albeit still very young for an offensive lineman, he wasn't able to capitalize on it. So I think from left to right, Hainsey, Lugg, Muster for Bars, Kramer looks pretty good. Now, Aaron Banks, could he factor in? Maybe, maybe at right tackle. You know, Rulin, we know that Rulin came a long, long way last year. But I agree with you, Pete. I think that's the starting line.
I tend to agree, too, because really the only person you can remove is Lugg from the four. The other four are going to start somewhere. I thought Lugg was a possible tackle candidate mid-season last year. I guess the next few practices will tell us if he's a possible tackle candidate. I just like Alex Barrs, I always thought Tommy Kramer's best position is guard. But they have to like somebody right tackle first. That's the key.
Yeah, I think this roster has more tackle candidates than guard.
Well, could Lugg and Kramer flip-flop?
That's what I was thinking.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, I think that the coaching staff's perspective is they've invested a lot of time in Kramer at tackle.
No, I get that, especially starting out at spring. I get that, and that certainly makes the most sense.
So they
want to
keep rolling with it. And Lugg is a super athlete. The term superstar has been used when I've asked about him around the program. Doesn't mean he'll be a superstar like right now, but he's got, certainly has NFL potential down the road. So overall, if you went Hainsey, Lugg, Muster for Bars, Kramer, or even if you swapped in Eichenberg for Lugg, I think Notre Dame has six and a half really high-level offensive linemen. You know, none of them are Nelson McGlinchey, but
I think maybe
should be a good group.
Left to right, the better line left to right is Hainsey, Kramer, Muster for Bars, Lugg. I think long-term, that
could be true, too, yeah. I think Notre Dame overall, they're like not in a rush to get this figured out, but they feel pretty good about the options that they have.
Look, they're not gonna keep Lugg off the field for a second straight year. I realize he was a true threat, right? You know, I mean,
there was no reason for him to play last year with McGlinchey.
No, I get that. Yeah. I get that. But it's a competition with Eichenberg at this point, and
not a direct one necessarily. That's the problem,
right? And if Lugg has quote superstar potential, I don't think they're going to wait till 2019 to play.
No, I mean, it's like until last year, the idea of rotating offensive linemen was talked about a lot, but never actually executed. And then they did it pretty effectively with Kramer and Hainsey last year. So I wonder if maybe Brian Kelly looks at it and is like, well, why don't we play more guys more often? Because we're losing Mustafa and Bars after the season. So let's get in a situation where we lose two starters, but we feel like we have 3.5 mm-hmm. returning, which is, I think, sort of how they see it right now.
I never thought Harry Hiestand would do that. I never thought he would do that. And now he's not there. So does that change or does that reduce the possibility of a split time?
It's a question for Jeff Quinn. We get to talk to him twice between now and next year this time, so we should get it out.
Make sure we ask that question.
Wash ND, from what you have thought and expected from Brian Kelly when he arrived in 2010, what have been the most overrated and underrated aspects of him as a coach?
I'm not sure underrated as much as unexpected. He's reinvented himself a couple times. For a guy that pounded the table, get used to it, and this is how I play football, and this is how I coach football, he has completely reinvented himself, and his best teams have nothing to do with what he came here for. High-tempo spread offenses that are always attacking. So I'm impressed that he reinvented himself in a way that I like to watch football, so that helps me say that as well. His best teams are not like his Cincinnati teams. 2012 is nothing like it. 2015 was not like it. Last year's was not like it at all.
That part's surprising.
Yeah. That's underrated though, right?
Well,
that's a good thing.
And the other thing we thought, and early on, they were very successful in November. I mean, obviously, especially the third year. And they had, you know, we all thought Longo coming in, hey, that's going to be a calling card for Brian Kelly's teams, that in November they're going to be virtually unbeatable, and they've been extremely beatable for quite some time.
10-1, right? In November to start, because that Tulsa game was this is semantics, but it was in October. So they're 10-1 to start in his first 3 years.
9-12 4-10 against Power 5.
You're saying this is the overrated part?
Yeah.
The November thing?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this in my column on Saturday. Just like when you look at it's not only the 4-10 against Power 5 teams in November, it's the 4. It's Wake Forest twice, Pittsburgh, and Boston College at Fenway.
No good sentence starts with Wake Forest.
That would be that would be one of my other surprises, is that I didn't think that he would lose to marginal teams as much as he has.
I would say one of the surprises in a negative sense, the quarterback development has been, he's sort of kind of won with a lot, like some really funky different parts at quarterback. But maybe not at the super high level. I thought that what he had done with sort of the Zach Caleros, Tony Pike would be like up a notch because the talent would be better and sort of been like the same notch, if not a notch down.
Right. But instead we're looking at, there are conversations about him being quarterback killer in Notre Dame.
He was quarterback guru.
Right.
Been a surprise, the November thing. But I think the biggest one is, O'Malley, what you said. This is a guy that said get used to it in 2010.
And then 1 week later, he reinvented himself. And he won every game by handing the ball off to Robert Hughes. They were 4-5, and he reinvented himself.
And he's done a pretty good job of, like, kind of owning that a little bit. Like, he'll joke about that in interviews from time to time, where I think somebody was asking about year 9 and everything, and he's like, year 9, you think, like, Holtz and Parsegian, I gotta get off my butt and win a national championship here. And, he joked around how it's like, what do these coaches have in common? It's like, well, those other guys figured out you have to run the ball a lot faster than me. That's good. Because I think that he came in to change Notre Dame. And I think ultimately Notre Dame changed him in the end. And that's a little bit of a surprise to me.
It's a good call. It's a good way of putting it.
All right. We will be back next week, Wednesday. I believe that's March 21st for our next podcast. Notre Dame's on spring break. Of a couple NIT games to talk about, but in 5 minutes or less.
And then we'll get back
to spring football because the day before we'll get about a half hour access and some player access.
The following one, if I go back to New York to cover basketball, damn it, we're talking about them again.
Yeah. So just be warned, but we'll keep the hoops talk to a minimum on our next podcast, which is Wednesday, March 21st. So until then, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, and Pete Sampson. Thanks for listening to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider.